Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
It is so great to see you all here. Glad you all showed up. I'm Greg Meyer, your host this morning. So going to share some time with you folks, and we got some important stuff to talk about. To get going, I want you to find that kind of quiet place. So just be comfortable in your seat. You can, you know, the breathing piece, which is really good. Close your eyes. And what I want you to do is just imagine, okay? I want you to imagine you woke up this morning, remembering kind of when you woke up this morning, and imagine that there was absolutely no agenda for you. You woke up and there was nothing you had to do, and you could get up and do what you wanted after you woke up. And imagine then in your mind's eye where you would be and what you'd be doing and who you'd be with right now. And, you know, no time travel, no, teleporting. It has to be realistic, like where you could have actually have gone and been doing and who you might be with this morning, all right? Just picture that in your mind's eye. So now, with your eyes still closed, imagining that, how many of you imagine yourself here doing this with us? Honest. Whoa, seriously? I was like expecting no hands. Mine is only up because I'm copying you. All right, are you going to open your eyes again as you wish? Me either. I mean, I'm not sure this is the place I would have chosen to be this morning. I'm sorry to kind of have you left down. For those of you that aren't here and are listening via the podcast, you may want to know right now that people like putting on their coats and taking their kids and there's a mass exodus heading to the door. No, seriously, we're here. I mean, face it, this isn't the worst place to be now, is it? No, we can choose to be here. In fact, the fact that you are here right now makes this the most important place to be, right? If this is where you are, this is therefore the most important place for you to be. It's kind of what we're talking about today. We're together here, we're going to make some important things happen for you and for the world that we rub shoulders with this week. We're going to make this matter. So congratulations for showing up. It wouldn't be the same without you, particularly for you, but for all of us. In fact, you may want to shake the hand of a person or two next to you. Thanks for showing up this morning. Go ahead. Congratulations for showing up this morning. All right. There's more to that than we think, folks. There's more to that than we think. So we've been talking about showing up for 4 weeks, including this week, heading towards what I would call the grand showing up, which is what Easter is. Easter is next week. And the first week we really talked about just physically showing up, like just getting yourself to where you need, where you feel called, where the important place is for you to be. And how you really can't do anything else if you didn't end up there. So this importance of aligning our schedules with our values. Then we spent a couple of weeks talking about this idea of fully showing up, being all there. I mean, because it's one thing to show up, it's another thing to show up, all right? And just struggling with this whole idea of being fully present and all the mental games and inner games that we play that keep us from showing up. And how we need to deliberately and persistently practice building these circles of trust that allow us to be ourselves and to fully show up wherever we are and whenever we are. There's a core concept to this whole thing that I think it's important to revisit again, and it comes from the very earliest roots of our faith behind Judaism, behind Islam, behind Christianity. Jesus repeated it again, and it is that simple verse that I think most of us are familiar with, that we should love the Lord our God with all our heart, with all our soul, with all our mind, and with all our strength. Did you catch the repetition in there? I mean, basically, the real point of this is that it is about love. That underpinning thing behind our entire faith is all about love and how love happens. It happens with all of our heart, with all of our soul, with all of our mind, with all of our strength. And this is not a rule. It's not like God is saying, if you're going to love, I want you to love this way. It's just telling us what we need to grasp. It's sharing with us the reality of the world that we live in and the way that love works. And that love isn't just towards God, but then it is reflected to self and to others, this wholehearted way of loving. And that's what showing up is. It's not half-hearted. It's not one foot in, one foot out. It's being all there, heart, soul, mind, strength, wholeheartedness. So today we're looking at how that wholeheartedness asks you, it asks me, it asks all of us to show up where we are, with what we're doing, and with who we're with. Even, and this is an important qualifier, even if that wasn't your first choice. Even if that's what you hadn't intended. Okay? Let's be honest with ourselves. How much of our lives do you think we spend that way? Having to be someplace that wasn't our first choice. I don't think that's like a fringe experience. I think it's probably the vast majority of our life. I mean, a lot of it is like, well, it's not really where I wanted to be, but it's okay. Like, you know, I don't know, like, when I remember having a house full of young kids and driving them off to this practice and to that event and this friend's house and doing all that running around, or, you know, sitting on the sidelines for my fourth soccer game with sixth, seventh, and eight-year-olds in 1 week. I don't know that's exactly what I wanted to do with it, but, you know, that's okay. I can see the value. This is an okay place to be. But then there's all that other stuff, you know? Like, soaking in the wonder of being in that linear parking lot that they call 35W, or filling out forms, the proverbial waiting in line at the DMV, laundry, folding laundry, ironing your socks, doing your taxes, public service announcement, Tuesday next week, by the way. You know, there's all that sort of stuff. I mean, don't even get me started about it. So what do you think? What do you think about all this show-up stuff? Do you think it doesn't apply to you if you really didn't intend to be in the first place? I mean, life gives you a pass if it wasn't what you had chosen. If the movie isn't about you, it's okay to be an extra. Just kind of be on the scene and walk around and do what they say, but you don't really have to contribute anything. I don't think so. I mean, I think we all know that's not true. I know it's not true about me. I know I'm called upon to show up wherever I am, whatever I'm doing, whoever I'm with, no matter what. But nonetheless, I find myself thinking about where I would rather be, who I'd rather be with, and what I'd rather be doing a lot of the time, when the real question is, where am I? What am I doing? And who am I with? And how can I be fully here right now? That's where I need to start, with being where I am, focused, aware, mindful, centered, asking that question, who can I fully and authentically be right now, right here? It comes down to the question being not whether I will show up or not. The question is, how will I show up? That's a question that I think we need to live with. You know, so don't spend a lot of time contemplating where you would rather be, because when we do all that, we kind of miss where we are. And we miss the potential of, by trying to control it so much, by trying to control where we are and what we're doing and who we're with, we miss the potential of where we are and what we can be and the importance of the people around us. I really do believe that when we spend a lot of energy on the fact that we aren't where we want, doing what we want, with who we want, we have a tendency to overestimate the value of being where we think we should have been, of our own plans, as if, like, I always know what is best for me, as if I know the future, and I know how this is all going to play out, and my plan was the right one. We overestimate that. Not that there's not some value in planning, not that there's not value in intentionality, but we overestimate it. And what we underestimate is the value of being where we are and what we're doing and who we're with, and the openness to being surprised by it. And contributing to it, being the piece of the puzzle to that moment that no one else could possibly be the way that we are right now, and what we can get from it as well. There's a classic movie from a couple years ago that I think makes this point just in a really great way, The Karate Kid. Yeah, you liked it too. Who's it? Jaden Smith plays Dre, the little 12-year-old guy who ends up in China getting beat up by the bullies, and he turns to the maintenance man, who is actually Jackie Chan, plays Mr. Han, who is the kung fu expert in disguise. And And what happens is that Dre just wants Mr. Han to give me some quick moves. I got to beat up these guys, all right? And Mr. Han knows that, no, Kung Fu is more than that. And so he has him doing this thing of, you know, put on the jacket, take it off, hang it up, take it off, throw it on the ground, pick it up, put your jacket on, take the jacket off, hang it up, take it off, throw it on the ground, over and over and over again. You can imagine how well that goes with a 12-year-old, right? Okay, well, let's see how this plays out.
Check it on.
Mr. Han, I already...
Check it on. Check it on.
I don't have a jacket.
Check it on. Be strong. Check it on. Firm. Check it off. Remember, always strong. Check it off. Strong. Left foot back. Right foot back. Left foot back. Pick up his jacket. Focus.
Okay.
Always concentrate. Left back, right foot back, pick up a jacket. Stay. Pick up your jacket. Strong. Hang it up. Hang it up. Hang up. And attitude. Strike. Hang up and attitude. Harder. Good. But no face. Check it out! Everything we do, Xiao Zui, it lives in how we put on the jacket, how we take off the jacket. And lives in how we treat people. Everything is Kung Fu.
Showing up lives in everything we do. It lives in how we put on the jacket. It lives in how we take off the jacket. It lives in how we walk into the room. It lives in how we notice what was going on in the room when you walk into it. It lives in how we respect other people. Everything is showing up. I think the lesson is pretty obvious coming from that. That is that there is no insignificant experience. We think we're just going through the motions, we're just doing stuff, that just stuff is just happening to us. But no, there is no insignificant experiences. There are only neglected opportunities. There are only times when we fail to be there, to realize, to be aware, and to learn so we could grow. Now, I know that's a high bar to meet, always realizing what's going on, what could be going on, learning from it, and being that full, aware showing up person, complete person all the time. And you aren't ever going to do it. You aren't ever going to fully be able to do it. But it can become a mode that you seek. It can be something that you are aware of rather than being the person who spends their life waiting for the right place, the right time, and the right people before you show up, before it's worth your while, fits your plans. It's dangerous to hold too tight to control on the circumstances of your life. Like I said, I'm all for intentionality, but if you plan everything, if you plan everything that you will experience, you will never exceed your own expectations. You will never exceed what you know already. We are called into a big, big world that is a lot bigger than us for a very particular reason, so that we could be surprised, so we could be challenged to show up where we need to. And we'll end up, when we try to control too much, we end up missing those amazing experiences that we could never have known were coming. There's a verse that actually gets a lot of buzz from the book of Proverbs, sort of this ancient wisdom that Israel is trying to share with us, and it says, "The plans of people are many, but it is the counsel of the Lord, the counsel of God, that will prevail." Now, people often kind of, I think, misunderstand that. They think, well, it's not our plans, it's God's plans. We're supposed to follow God's plans. It's not what it says. It uses a different word. It's our plans. Yes, this is what I predict. This is what I want. This is what I think should happen. But, it says, but it's the counsel of the Lord, the counsel of God that will prevail. The counsel, the word there is saying, it's the perspective that God sees of the world, that's what's going on. Basically, if you really wanted to translate this, I think you would read it as, many are the plans in a person's heart, but God knows what's actually going on. So are you going to pay attention to your narrow view, or are you going to open yourself up to this bigger, this life that is woven together with yourself and with others and with God in order to wake us up to it? The Bible is just full of story of person after story of person who are experiencing this, getting pulled into something they did not know was going on, and because they were aware of it or open to it or not open to it, it changed so much for them. I mean, we have the story of our namesake, Jacob's well, Jacob from Genesis chapter 32 at the river Jabbok, before he crosses over, and he, while he's waiting there all night, a man comes and wrestles with him. And he has like, oh, wow, you know, what's going on? This is inconvenient. And then he gradually, as the wrestling goes on, he realizes this is a spirit. In other words, there's something more going on here than just a wrestling match that threatens me. To finally, where it's over, he realizes I am wrestling with God. And because he is open to discovering what is actually going on, he becomes Israel. He becomes the one who wrestles with God, which becomes our heritage, the people who wrestle with God. You have in Hebrews this verse that you may have heard before. Do not neglect to show love to strangers, for by doing so, some people have entertained angels without knowing it. Referring back to an experience of Abraham's back in Genesis chapter 18, where he sees some strangers coming by, and it actually turns out to be God who is visiting him. But because he was willing to do that. Then you have this very quintessential story from Jesus when he says, he's telling them a story, and in the midst of the story, we get to this line that says, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not take care of you? We don't remember ever seeing you that way. And then he will answer them, truly I tell you, you've seen people like that all along, but you didn't do anything for them, the least of these, so you did not do it for me. I mean, the point of this isn't that we're supposed to know some biographical details or facts or events that happened in the Bible. All of these stories are trying to tell us what is going on, even when we think it isn't happening. It's telling us that showing up is everything, and everything is showing up. Being open to what is here could change everything for us. It's an important place for us to be. There are no insignificant events. There are only neglected opportunities. I remember a story of my own. I had been teaching a seminar for 2 days in Indiana, and I was supposed to fly back Sunday night, and I knew I had to hit the ground running again on Monday morning, and I was just plain tired. And I got to the airport, and the plane was full, and I got bumped. Great. So I got, like, the red eye flying back. I had to wait kill time at the airport for how many hours, and finally catch a midnight flight going back. Not a happy camper. So all I can think of is get on the airplane and fall asleep, And I sit next to a chatty guy, of course. A banker, kind of retiring banker from the East Metro. Atheist his entire life. Never really given God any consideration. Certainly had never thought about God the way we, this is just when we were in the very beginning stages of starting Jacob's Well, had never really even thought about church in the way we were talking about it. We talked from takeoff to landing about what's going on. At the end of the flight, he said, I think we need more churches like this one you're starting, and he gave me a check. And he said, keep in touch. And for those first couple of years, I used him as a sounding board for a lot of the things we did, because he did not buy this stuff, hook, line, and sinker. He was the kind of person that I needed to be able to hear from. He was sort of one of my litmus test people. So the question is, did God want my flight to be overbooked so that I would sit next to him? I don't think so. No, I mean, there's a lot of scenarios that could have been great. My just getting home on time so I could have been rested and been with my family a little bit after neglecting them for a couple of days would have been a really good outcome that God could have wanted. For me to maybe sit next to a different person on another flight that just needed someone to listen to them, that might have been a good outcome. I don't think there was a right thing, a place that I was supposed to be in and a thing that I was supposed to do. The fact is that God, the lesson from that is that God is everywhere. And God wants to plug us in everywhere. There is a reason to show up wherever we are, whatever we're doing, whoever we're with. And God is present and wants to be vital in that. So being in touch with God doesn't mean that you always be in the right place, doing the right thing, with the right person every time. It means that you will show up fully wherever you are, whatever you're doing, whoever you're with. There are precipices of fatalism that surround this whole thing about where am I supposed to be? What is God's plan for me? And I don't think any of them really take us to a good place. God asks us to take responsibility and to know that God is everywhere and there is value of showing up both despite and because of where you are, what you're doing, and who you're with. Which brings up FOMO. If you don't know what FOMO was, well, long story. I didn't either, although well acquainted with the concept. FOMO is, well, we have this, it's the fear of missing out, okay? Hashtag FOMO. Fear of missing out. So we have trouble showing up, being where we're supposed to be, being where we are because of our fear of missing out. It's this fear of missing out on something, or there's something going on someplace that I should be part of right now, and I'm not. It may be an event that you aren't part of, and it makes you kind of wonder, wow, how come I didn't get invited? Don't they like me anymore? Or if I'm not there, I'm going to be missing something that I'll never be able to do again, and this is my only chance to do it, and there's going to be something incomplete. There's going to be something missing in my life forever and ever, and oh no, what do I do? I mean, it can plague us. It can also be a fear of missing out on something of life in general. A much bigger kind of existential angst that we bear. I never went to college. What if I don't ever own my own home? What if I don't get married? What if I don't have children? How come I didn't get that promotion? Is that going to change my life forever? Both of these approaches to our fear of missing out feed on our insecurity, our feeling of being unworthy unless we have some sort of external peace feeding into it and supporting us. The idea that something external, some circumstance or some experience will somehow prop us up and make us worthy is what's at the root of this. But remember, worthiness has to come from within. It's a reflection of who we are, not what we do or what we're after. Oh, is this for me? Did you make that for me? Thank you. I like it. Did you want it back? Thank you. Our next guest appearance will be. That worthiness needs to come from within. Again, a verse that I've asked us to spend a little bit of time thinking about every week is this verse that you are the temple of God. You are not a building where God resides, but the word there, what it's trying to say is you are the vessel. You are the vehicle of God's power out in the world. And you aren't that because of your experiences. They aren't that because of your expertise or because of your accomplishments. or because of any circumstances you might happen to be in, you're that vessel of God's because you are you. That's it. No conditions. That's it. That's all. And that's enough. If you need to hear that again, hear it. You are how God's power can enter this world, and it isn't because of your circumstances, it isn't because of your experiences, it isn't because of your accomplishments, it's because you are you. And that's it, that's all, and that is enough. You are enough, okay? And the missing out that all of us should really be afraid of isn't in some experience or some sort of event or some sort of accomplishment. It's missing out on being ourselves. I should be afraid of missing out on myself. I'm so distracted with the where and the what and the who that I would like that I fail to discover me. And if I don't know me, how do I bring myself? How do I show up with me to the places that could have that power in the world? So showing up for yourself is the first showing up. Accepting yourself, loving yourself, valuing yourself. Not because you're better than anyone else and because you're so great. Remember, comparison and perfection are the enemies of worthiness, the enemies of wholeheartedness. But you can love yourself, you can value yourself because you are you. And you have the permission then to learn and to grow and to try and to make mistakes and then to get up and figure out what you need to do to fix what you messed up and then to grow from that and to try and to learn again over and over and over again. That's life. That's showing up. So how many places can you be at once, right? We all know the answer to that question. We can be one place at a time. So that means we have to choose. And this week I'd like to frame that choice a little bit differently because there are really two choices in there. The first choice is to choose where I will show up, all right? That's where I set my priorities. That's my plans. I'm going to choose where I think I should show up. That's the first choice. The second choice is to choose to show up where I am. Okay, you are here. Will you choose to show up here? It's a choice. It's an important one. The first choice is important as well. But the second one is the one that makes a difference. Even if it's where you wanted to be, will you choose to show up once you're there? So this fear of missing out doesn't only rob us from ourselves, it also steals our presence from other people. And everyone loses out on that. We reach for where we aren't instead of rooting where we are, and everyone loses. Now, I think our imaginations do this enough to us. Like, I spend a lot of time thinking, gee, wouldn't it really be nice if I was there and I let my mind wander and I'm there instead of here? But our technology has turned our attentiveness to what isn't going on around us and it has made that actually become a national epidemic. And yeah, I'm talking about these things, all right? Our cell phones. I think we need to talk about our relationships with our technology. Technology is neither good nor bad. It's all about our relationship with it. And I don't think I'm like breaking any secrets by letting you folks know that it's a problem right now with us in this world. Our phones, our tablets, our laptops, they're great connectors with one another and with our world, but they also keep us from showing up where we actually are. I know this from personal experience because I've seen people do it. Yeah, that was a joke. thank you for the obligatory laughter. Frankly, this is something I struggle with a lot. I mean, have you ever gone to work and forgotten your phone? Did you obsess over it all day long? Yeah, I get on my bike and ride home to go get it. I mean, I can't tell, is it because I technically need it or am I dependent on it? Somewhere in between there, right? But you've all seen it. You've been at the restaurant and the couple sitting there, both of them on their phones talking to somebody else. Or better yet, each playing a game on their phone while they're waiting for the food. That's impressive. Or how about the parent pushing the stroller down the street with their kid when they're out for a walk and spending the whole time on their phone? Excuse me if I'm getting a little close to home. We all do this sort of stuff. Or maybe answering a text while you're driving because, can you imagine? I mean, don't I have to answer them right now? I mean, forget the fact that I'm endangering everybody around me. I like this cartoon. This is Steve Sack, our Star Tribune cartoonist last week. So if you can't see it, it's a funeral, and the guy's in his coffin, and he's got his phone covering up his face, and his wife is saying, "He looks so natural." And a distracted pedestrian, yeah. So speaking of failing to show up for yourself, Simon Sinek, I don't know if some of you are, probably many of you are aware of him, he, among others, cites the research that shows how each like on our Facebook posts or every retweet of our own Twitter posts, every text message that we receive gives us a little external affirmation. And along with it, a little shot of dopamine. Yeah. The brain chemistry has shown this. Dopamine is this chemical that your brain produces that gives you this sense of pleasure, of euphoria. It's a pain-numbing thing that your body does as well. And it's addictive, literally addictive, okay? So rather than finding our worthiness inside us, we seek it from our cell phones, and there are 24/7 access to social media that can give us those little shots of dopamine, those little shots of approval that we can't coax out of ourselves, and that's too difficult to get it from real people in real time through real relationships. And we panic sometimes because things are happening and we're not aware of it, you know, this fear of missing out, the FOMO thing. But what we're really missing is that easy, cheap rush of dopamine that we have gotten used to, that we've actually become addicted to. And each text that pops in, each like on our Facebook feed gives us another one of those. And so we learn to turn to that. And basically what happens is that we let social media addictive affirmations replace our own self-affirmation. It's really hard to wrestle with myself long enough to feel this internally. So I'm going to let my phone do it for me. But because it's only a phone, I have to keep going back and keep going back and keep going back. And when the pace of it stops, it all runs dry for me so quickly. And what happens through all that then is that we become hardwired to turn to the ease of social media connectedness rather than the messiness of human relationships. Right? This is just so much easier, and human relationships that would do the same thing for me are so messy and so hard. It's easier for me to post something cool on Facebook than it is for me to show up at group life and deal with real stuff of life. It's easier for me to do that than it is to sit down with my partner and talk through some stuff that we've had tension with that will, again, create that circle of trust in our relationship so that I feel the joy of knowing and being with another person. It's easier to throw 10 text messages out to friends, seeing that, hoping that a couple of them reply and make me feel better about myself, than pausing and saying, gee, I'm kind of all by myself right now. Maybe I should give my friend a call, the one who's he's been kind of down, and I should ask him if he wants to just hang out tonight and form a real relationship. Spend that time and energy doing it the hard way, the real way, the way that lasts. Simon Sinek, on his famous millennial question video that many of you have likely seen, he makes this all very practical, and I just want to show that part of it to you.
Missing out on. There should be no cell phones in conference rooms. None. Zero. And I don't mean the kind of like sitting outside waiting to text. I mean like when you're sitting and waiting for a meeting to start, this is what we all do. We all sit here and wait for the meeting to start. Meeting starting? Okay. And we start the meeting. No. That's not how relationships are formed. Remember we talked about it's the little things? Relationships are formed this way. We're waiting for a meeting to start and we go, how's your dad? I heard he was in the hospital. Oh, he's really good. Thanks for asking. He's actually at home now. Oh, I'm really glad. It was really amazing. I know, it was really scary for a while. That's how you form relationships. Hey, did you ever get that report done? Oh my God, no, I didn't. I'll help you out. Can I help you out with that? Really? That's how trust forms. Trust doesn't form in an event, in a day. Even bad times don't form trust immediately. It's the slow, steady consistency. And we have to create mechanisms where we allow for those little innocuous interactions to happen. But when we allow cell phones in conference rooms, we just, okay, have the meeting. And then my favorite is like when there's a cell phone there and you go like this, you go. It rings and you go, I'm not gonna answer that. Mr. Magnanimous, you know? When you're out for dinner with your friends, like, I do this with my friends. When we're going out for dinner and we're leaving together, we'll leave our cell phones at home. Who are we calling? Maybe one of us will bring a phone in case we need to call an Uber. or take a picture of our meal.
That was about saying, come on.
I'm an idealist, but I'm not insane. You
know? Not a heathen.
I mean, it looked really good. We'll take one phone. And so it's like an alcoholic. The reason you take the alcohol out of the house is because we cannot trust our willpower. We're just not strong enough. But when you remove the temptation, it actually makes it a lot easier. And so when you just say, don't check your phone, people literally will go like this. And somebody will go to the bathroom, and what's the first thing we do? Because I wouldn't want to look around the restaurant for a minute and a half, you know? But if you don't have the phone, you just kind of enjoy the world. And that's where ideas happen. The constant engagement is not where you have innovation and ideas. Ideas happen when our minds wander and we go, and you see something, I bet they could do that. That's called innovation, right? But we're taking away all those little moments, right? You should not, and none of us should charge our phones by our beds. We should be charging our phones in the living rooms, right? Remove the temptation. You wake up in the middle of the night because you can't sleep, you won't check your phone, which makes it worse. But if it's in the living room, it's relaxed, it's fine. But it's my alarm clock. Buy an alarm clock. They cost $8, right? I'll buy you an alarm.
Oh, sorry, is it over? I'd seen it already, so I was just tweeting about this cool video we were all watching. You know, there's really not that much at stake with this, just our humanity, you know? Just being the person we really are and living into the power of being there. I mean, that's really all we're talking about with this. It's not that big deal. But no, truly, okay? This isn't about being polite. This isn't about being cool with technology or not being cool with technology. It's about deciding where I am going to find my self-worth. It's about whether I will create my circle around myself, my circle of trust around myself, my cell phone, or am I going to create it around myself and the people that I am with, wherever I am, whatever I'm doing, whoever I'm with. And then I'll use technology in order to continue to strengthen those relationships, but not to be them, not to replace them. So here's the long and short of all this, okay? Long and short of all this is showing up is the right thing to do. It isn't what you're supposed to do, all right? Get rid of that. It isn't a duty. It's not an obligation. It is the right thing. It's the real thing. It is the only path. It's the way of life. The only way of life towards meaning, towards fulfillment, towards that stuff that we need to figure out. The vulnerability of this act of showing up is a place in which we do those things that cannot be done anywhere else. It's a place where we find meaning. It's a place where we learn to give love and to express love. It's a place where we figure out who we are in the world around us. It's the only way to raise your children so that they are whole and healthy. It's the only way to inspire your coworkers so that they can move towards innovation and find joy in their place of work. It's the only way that you can really show up on the streets and speak out on things that you value, and the people that are around you who don't even agree with you would at least understand what you are trying to say. It happens because we show up. And you can't always do it. You won't always do it. And when you do, sometimes it won't go so well. And you'll have to try again, and that's okay, all right? And sometimes when you show up, other people are not going to appreciate it. Sometimes they will mock you for it. Sometimes they'll even take advantage of it and turn that against you. And that's okay, because showing up is the right thing to do. This week that we are entering right now has traditionally been called by the church Holy Week. It starts with today, when Jesus entered into Jerusalem for his final showdown. I would like to call it his ultimate show up with the powers to be of his world. Goes through Friday when he was killed. We call it Good Friday. And on to this discovery of life despite all that, which happened on Sunday, which is Easter next week. Now, he didn't go through all that because he was supposed to, because God made him or something. He didn't do it because he knew in the end there was a win for him and it was okay. He was willing to do anything for that win that sat on the other side of all the pain and all the struggle. He did it because he knew loving with his whole heart, his soul, his mind, and his strength was the right thing to do. It mattered. He knew that the hope of living that kind of life was the kind of hope that all of us needed to experience. He needed it. The world needed it. You and I need it. So my prayer for you and for all those who seek life through themselves, woven together with God and with others, woven with our whole heart, our whole soul, our whole mind, and our whole strength, that we would find the power of God at work within us to allow us to show up wherever we are, whatever we're doing, and whoever we're with. And by doing that, we might all see the kingdom a little bit more clearly and all bask in the warmth of this light of it a little bit more warmly. May it be so. Amen.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacobs Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.